Live from Sam Baldwin and his son Jonah's houseboat in Seattle, Washington, and brought to you by CoverGirl. Easy, breezy, beautiful. CoverGirl. I'm Delmon.
And I'm Alicious.
And this is EQ2 Talk.
People, let me tell you about my best friend. She's a warm-hearted person who loved me till the end. People, let me tell you about my best friend. She's a one-boy cuddly toy. My up, my down, my pride and joy. People, let me tell you about it. It's so much fun. Whether we're talking man to man or whether we're talking sun to sun. She's my best.
This is episode number 21, and we are recording on April 8th, 2011. And why, Allie, don't we have theme music this episode?
The penguins stole my sanity.
Damn those angry birds. I don't have time to waste on trying to get 3 stars out of this one. So what do we have on tap for this episode?
Well, as you know, Del, the last few shows have been sort of out of the norm for us, out of our usual routine. And we've gotten a little bit backed up with our listener emails.
Yeah, so backed up.
So we wanted to kind of get back to basics this time. So we're actually going to devote the bulk of this episode to listener feedback and hopefully try to give some attention to the topics that you, the listeners, have brought up. But before we get into that, we actually have a couple of housekeeping items we need to sweep under the rug.
Why are we sweeping our first housekeeping item under the rug?
Well, it's an errata.
Well, if you're sweeping it, then it must be your errata.
It is, actually. And let me just start by saying, Del, I was double wrong.
That's not just wrong. That is wrong twice over.
It's like uber wrong. It's like epic wrong.
What caused you to be epically wrong?
Well, I can blame it on Ninja, maybe.
No, I don't think he'd like that, but okay.
No, okay. It's actually totally my fault. He, in episode 17, we interviewed Ninja, as you recall.
I do recall.
And he was talking about some of the lore, introducing us to Destiny Velius. And I mistakenly referred to the signature quest that he was talking about as Footsteps of D'Artagnan, which was wrong. And then in episode 17, I tried to rectify that by saying that I should have said subordination, insubordination was the correct signature quest. But it turns out that was wrong, too. So I realized that after we recorded. The correct signature quest that he was actually referring to was confronting the God Slayer. And I'm fairly certain that I'm correct this time. So hopefully we'll be done with this errata.
I got to give you credit, though, Allie. You are one stand-up ranger. If it was me and I made a mistake 4 episodes ago and nobody called me on it, and then I tried to correct myself and was further wrong and nobody called me on it, I think I would have certainly swept that not only under the rug but also out the door.
So, well, the thing is, though, Ninja did call me on it, so I couldn't really ignore it.
Fair enough. When you get called out by a red name, you're probably right. You do have to stand up.
And as a ranger, I need to take advantage of every chance that I get to stand up.
Absolutely, because I'm tired of rezzing you so you can stand back up. That's for sure.
So the other housekeeping item that we don't want to sweep under the rug is...
Housekeeping? you need new towels?
Is awarding prizes.
That is right. In episode 20, our role reversal episode, we played Are You Smarter Than Allie? And Allie won some prizes for all the listeners at home. So we invited folks back then to email us as their entries, and we got a ton of responses, and we were elated to see all the people who listened and enjoyed that episode and gave us the wonderful feedback that they did. But I think it is now, as you say, Allie, time to reach in and pull some names out and award the prizes.
Indeed. So, Del, would you do the honors of pulling names from your magical hat?
Yes, I have the sorting hat here, and right. I have put everybody's name into the hat. Well, except for there were a few people who I didn't like, so I didn't really put their names in the hat. but we won't mention their names.
You're lying. Of course, you put everyone's name in the hat.
Okay, we'll go with that for now. And we'll pull them out. So, but first, let's tell folks what is the first prize pack that the first name that I draw out will be receiving.
Well, the first prize pack contains an LON 24 by 30 poster enhanced steam suit by Christine from the Against the Void card set, 1,000 station cash, and an EQ2 hat. So, Dell, who is our first winner?
All right, let me stick my hand in here and pull it out. And the first winner is Thurston Bloodhowl.
Yay! What server does he play on?
Is he on Antonia Bale?
I do not know.
Okay. He did not include his server name with his entry.
He's written to us before.
He has.
Well, congrats, Thurston. Enjoy your prize pack. Our second prize pack contains a 36 by 24 LON poster of Storm by Lucas Graciano from the Ethernauts card set, 1,000 station cash, and an EQ2 leather-bound journal crafted in Italy.
All right, let me reach in to the sorting hat. I'm fishing around, and here's the name. I don't like that name. Let me get another one. Okay, here we go. I have Upier from the Unrest server.
Upier.
It said Upier?
I think he goes by Upier.
All right, fair enough.
And,
so congrats.
And not Upiers.
Oh, not to Upiers. Okay. That would be another entry.
Yeah. Congrats, Upier, on your fat loots. And our third prize pack, the mother of all prize packs.
Would you say that this is the exquisite prize pack?
Sure. The third prize pack contains a 24 by 30 poster called Black Timber Treant by Patrick Ho from the Ethernauts card set, 1,000 station cash, and a collectible armored Highland Stalker pewter figurine from the Sentinel's Fate Collector's Edition, as well as an EverQuest II Rise of Kunark Fragmat gaming mousepad.
Alrighty, let me stick my hand in here one final time. Let me swish it around. Oh, yeah. It's in there deep.
Ay, ay, ay.
All right, and here we go. I'm pulling it out, and the winner of the grand prize pack is... It's blank, Allie. It says nothing on it. Oh, I'm sorry. It's on the other side. And the winner is Indebuff, the Naked Warden of Netalos.
Congrats, Indebuff. And to all of our listeners. And thanks to everybody who entered.
Yes, it was great to get all those entries that we did. And again, all the really positive feedback we did on episode 20. We went a little overboard with the sound effects and all that. But folks said that they really did enjoy those. Not sure if we're going to do that again because there was a lot of post-production to get all that in there. But I think it was a really good episode. I enjoyed doing it, and I experimented with some new stuff in the recording software, so that was a lot of fun. So maybe we'll do something like that again in the future.
Yeah, I certainly had a lot of fun, and I enjoyed listening to it after the fact with all the stuff in there. Why don't we get right down to some listener feedback, Del?
Yes, we have a plethora of emails.
Oy.
Yes, we have a whole bunch of emails. Because we haven't done email in the past two episodes because we had the other stuff going on. So we kind of have a backlog to go through.
Yes, we do.
So I believe I have the first one, and it is from Ukabi. And Ukabi writes, "Hi, Allie and Delmon. I haven't written lately. Not much to say, but I had intended to drop a line and say I'm still listening and loving the show. Then two events in the span of a couple of weeks prompted me to write, and I don't know which one was cooler. Giving roses to Allie and Delmon during E-Release Day, or getting teamed up with Delmon in an impromptu raid in Storm Gorge for one of the Velius public quests. Both were cool. Of course, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on the expansion, but I don't think I actually need to ask. I'm feeling a theme coming up for that in the next show. I'm liking the expansion and the new quests. I'm trying to take my time and enjoy them, but I will admit to rushing up to the hill to the Golmari, which I can't seem to stop calling Goat Mary, to start the Griffin quest. Blushes. I did not exploit any bugs, though I did click the poor little Griffon a lot, checking to see if he was ready to hand over the next quest. Poor little guy is probably missing a few feathers because of it. I've participated in a few of the public quests, nothing like a little mass mayhem. I'm hoping the bugs are worked out soon, though, or I'm afraid that people will just stop doing them, and they do have possibilities. I like the idea of a quick little quest for a bunch of strangers to team up on and make a few new friends along the way. I have to say that one of the nicest surprises, though, is the pack pony, possibly because I hadn't heard anything about it ahead of time. Can't wait for the next show. Happy questing, Ukabi and Angie.
Aggie. So she brings up a couple of things that are interesting topics of discussion. Just really quick, going back to the roses, did you have any thoughts about the rose quest and the Irelisi Day in general?
Absolutely. I think the whole rosing quest scenario, if you want to call it that, much improved over previous years where we kind of had tiered stages of doing it and in the journal could see exactly how far along we were in progression of doing them. And I also very much liked the fact that we could complete handing them out after E-Release Day. Gathering had to be done during the live event. But because some of these live events are somewhat short, it was nice to have the opportunity, I think it was 2,000 was the final round, to give out those 2,000, say, after the live event had finished. I still see people rosing nowadays, still even.
Yeah, I agree. I think it was really a great change that they made to allow you to see the quantity that you need and the quantity that you already have done and put it into a quest format as opposed to having to go back to town on it and click on a poster. There was something about that, though. When they first brought that in, it was sort of secret and nobody knew about it. And so that was kind of fun to sort of stumble across or hear about sort of in channels or whatever. That part was kind of cool, but I think now that everybody knows about it, it's nice to have the quest. It certainly makes life a lot easier.
Yeah, that's a tough one to balance because I like the discovery. And as kind of Ukabi points to a little bit about another topic of not knowing. So it's fun to discover because you don't know it's coming, those titles from previous years. But then again, the, oh my God, there's one more and there's only 48 hours left. What am I going to do? Am I going to have time to sleep and still gather roses and hand them all out? That panic and stress that sets in from that balanced against the discovery. I like both sides.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure which I really prefer.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I'll take either, basically. I'll just deal with what they give us, basically. But I do prefer this way. Another thing she brings up is the pack pony. How do you feel about it?
The pack pony, I am... Well, I don't want to sound disappointed or unhappy with pack pony.
You already do sound disappointed. I'm shocked that you're not bouncing up and down in your seat and saying, clapping and saying how happy you are.
Yeah, there's one thing about the pack pony that I guess it bothers me. Let me be honest. I'm certainly not running through the streets with a sandwich board, arms a flailing, you know, pitchforks and torches in my hand about this. If there was one thing I kind of don't much care for the pack pony, is that he gives too much stuff too fast, in my opinion. I think it's the 3-hour turnaround. You can ask him to go work on some stuff for you in 3 hours. He's done. That's a lot of stuff very quickly, you know, and basically for, I would guess, an average game night, the minute you sign on, if you summon Pony, you ask him to work, by the time you're probably done for a good evening of maybe raiding or questing, he's ready to unload. And then you can click him and he'll work overnight for you. And the next time you log in, there'll be more stuff. So while it's nice to have all those harvestables available to you, it has, to some degree, trivialized the need for harvesting and therefore has, I would say, maybe accelerated at least my ability to level trade skillers. So am I complaining that I'm going too fast? Maybe. I guess I would say I would not be upset if Pack Pony was nerfed to, rather than 3 hours, to, I would say, maybe 24 hours would be a good time window for him to do his work. Does that sound bad?
Yeah, to me it does.
Okay.
And the only reason I say that, I mean, I get what you're saying. I don't really like the idea of trivializing aspects of the game either, but I don't honestly feel that the quantity that Pack Pony gives you is enough to trivialize harvesting. If I go out for an hour and harvest, an hour, a solid hour of harvesting a particular area, I'm going to get a lot more than what the Pack Pony gives me. He only brings back, say, 47 roots in his pile of other stuff that he's giving me, that I don't really need all of that stuff. I only need the roots, the wood, maybe some ore, and maybe some, you know, of the berries or whatever for the provisioner. I don't know that 47 roots is going to make or break the economy or the harvesting market. Especially, I mean, I get what you're saying. So maybe you do it every 3 hours. Maybe you go watch TV for 3 hours, come back, unload your Pack Pony, and rinse and repeat. Maybe you have multiple tunes that you're doing this on and you funnel them all into one area, to one tune. Okay, maybe if you do it that way, you might be having some sort of an impact. Yeah, I don't know, 47 roots, or even if it's like 70 at a time, I don't think you see more than 100. Certainly you're not up into the hundreds every 3 hours.
No, certainly not that high. You're right.
I mean, you could harvest a lot more on your own in 1 hour than the Pack Pony can in three.
Yeah, and again, I'm certainly not looking at a gift Pack Pony in the mouth. That's all. I'm saying if it was nerfed, I would not be all upset about it and made longer. It's nice to have. It has certainly made it so that I have a quantity of supplies for my non-gilded trade skilling alts. Delmon does not have to go out and harvest for them and bring them back supplies because they're too low to go harvest on their own. So that's nice to have. I just remember it being a little bit more of a challenge for me when I was leveling the woodworker. Delmon had to spend a lot of time gathering wood to give to him. Now Delmon just summons Pack Pony every 3 hours.
Yeah.
And gets a quarter of a stackish. It stacks 200. So if we're saying 47, a quarter of a stackish every 3 hours in a night of summon Pack Pony, let him work, summon him again just before I sign off, I've gotten half a stack worth of stuff with no effort and no time focused on harvesting.
Yeah, I can see that. I can see your point there. I understand it's actually 2 hours, not three.
Oh, is it 2 hours? Even faster. Okay.
So you're even more sad.
Yeah. Again, certainly, I'm not bitching. I'm just saying, gee, it seems a little fast for what his return. I was surprised how fast he did it, and would not be upset if it was extended.
I do think 24 might be a little excessive, though.
Okay.
Unless he, you know, loaded up, but he's only a pony. He's small, and let me tell you. You don't want to be harvesting or unloading the Pack Pony out and while you're out adventuring. Certainly not when you're out on a public quest or, I mean, I've made that mistake before.
Yeah, I only summon him in town when I'm right by the bank so I can immediately put that stuff into the shared bank and get it over, or the junk onto the broker for a copper.
The meat?
The meat.
Selling your meat for cheap, Del?
Dell's meat is cheap on the unrest broker. And one other thing, I guess now I am going to bitch about Pack Pony, okay? There is one thing that does bother me about Pack Pony. He is a little too needy.
What do you mean needy?
I summon him and he starts nuzzling me. I don't need to be nuzzled by Pony. You know, let's be honest, horse on dwarf love is not something anybody needs to see. Pack Pony needs to keep a respectable distance between myself and his muzzle.
Never mind. You don't want to know. Alrighty. Well, I can understand that. I can appreciate that. Let's just call it a couple of different ways to see the same thing.
And they call it pony love.
Okay. Ukubi also talks a little bit about public quests. One of the things that she says, well, a couple of things, nothing like a little mass mayhem. That is very true. How do you feel about the public quests in general? About randomly grouping with people, strangers, and the problems that you encounter or enjoyment or whatever?
I think public quests are a love them and hate them at the same time, but certainly far more love. I'll say that, far more love for them. I enjoy them because I think, as you mentioned in previous conversations, you have the opportunity to ride the coattails of other people there.
Yeah.
So I, as a healer, am not must heal, must save the group, must be the hero, must, you know, keep them alive type mode. If I want to show up and I just, you know, I don't want to get in a group and I don't want to have that responsibility, I can just stand on the hill and nuke and do that. So everybody can kind of play it their own way. There's no commitment. I have no responsibility to the rest of the people there. I'm in it for myself, kind of.
Well, you do have a little bit of a responsibility. Being a healer, people expect you to heal.
Exactly. But if I don't want to group, then I don't have to heal. So I can make that choice for myself. If I'm not in the healing mood, I won't group, and I'll just kind of stand on the hill and do the nuking and participate that way.
That's a good point. And some people have theories. There are all kinds of theories flying left and right about whether grouping is a benefit or not a benefit. I think there are certain classes that really can't really – well, I don't know how it works exactly, but I think there are certain classes that are better off in a raid situation based on the fact that they aren't really able to contribute to anything unless they can buff people.
Yeah, although it's kind of interesting. Say, take a class like a troubadour, for example, right?
Right.
If you want to call them a DPS class because they're a scout per se, but their greatest benefit is in enhancing other players than necessarily the DPS that they can do, say, compared to a ranger like yourself or an assassin.
Mm-hmm.
But in a PQ, and this is part of the great mystery, that curtain that you like to talk about that I don't always want to look behind, and I agree now at this point I don't want to look behind,
yeah,
is, you know, what is the measure of a good player, and not maybe player is a good word, but a good indicator of participation, because that's really right. What you're measured against, say, during a public quest. Are people, just because I'm giving them buffs and stuff, is that considered participation? Or is it just me swinging my sword or my axe or heals that I've cast or the amount of cures like that? So to me, when it's come to the PQs, I have not tried the whole min-maxing scenario. I'm just happy to go there, do sometimes the little that I do, and get a reward and walk away from it. I think I get a lot of AA out of them for the amount of time and effort that I put into them. I think the rewards are fantastic in that respect.
I have to agree. I'm actually upgrading my gear from the public quests. There's that. The other thing you talked about, the curtain. I don't want to see behind the curtain in this particular situation. I don't want anyone else to either, because I sort of feel like people have a tendency, once they find out pieces of information about what does what, you know, what X equals, they have a tendency to tell everybody else what they're doing wrong or what they should be doing to make X equal what they think it should. I just don't want us to know necessarily in this particular scenario, especially because the public quests are so non-commitment oriented. It's a matter of random people get together and see what happens, like a little flash mob. I like that aspect of it. I like that you don't have to know anything. You can just show up, you know, swing your sword a few times, and you get something for it. It's based on something, some formula behind the curtain I don't want to know. I think it kind of takes the fun out of it if you analyze the crap out of it.
And two, I would say even this, if we know what X is, then I, who want the best reward, will do everything in my powers to do whatever X is.
Mm-hmm. So, maximize X and do nothing that doesn't maximize X.
Right. So
even if it's not for the benefit of people staying alive or whatever.
Exactly. It's kind of like that whole, and I know we've talked about this, that whole heel parse mentality.
Yeah.
I'll do anything to get on the heel parse to the detriment of the success of the encounter. I'm just doing whatever I can to look statistically correct. So
you don't get bumped the next raid.
Exactly. Exactly. Right. So say in the PQ scenario, and I'm just making this up off the top of my head. It's, the number of clicks, right? You know, whatever a click is. Well, then you know what? I'm going to sit there and I'm going to click auto attack on and off, and I'm going to find the spells with the shortest cast time and just keep clicking them, even if they are not necessary, because clicking is more important than anything else. So I think sometimes folks get caught up in that min-maxing because they do know what's behind the curtain and trying to min-max to whatever behind the curtain is telling them.
Yeah, and I don't want that.
I agree.
Wow, we agree.
So how have you done in terms of upgrading your gear? You were mentioning that you've upgraded some.
Yeah, I still need – well, I haven't done them as much as you have. You've put in a lot more time and effort into the public quests. I've sort of kind of – I would say I've been moderately aggressive with them. I haven't been totally lazy, but I haven't been super all over it. There are just so many other things that I'm – wanting to do. I have almost all the pieces of armor. I don't have a hat for some reason. I think I might have gotten rid of it. I think I might have gotten one and then gotten rid of it because I have the tier 3 helm from the last expansion. But I think I want to get it just to finish out the set. I don't have the breastplate and I don't have the weapon. But those I think I will eventually get. I just have to try. I just have to keep trying.
I don't know if I've necessarily been trying hard. I have participated, like you say, in a lot of them. And I think to this point I have 3-some-odd breastplates and 2 of the weapons. I don't know what I'm doing with the extras. I guess I don't know if I can mute them. I believe I can sell them or something. You can't. Okay.
You can't mute the armor. I don't know if you can. I would imagine it's the same for the other pieces. You cannot mute them.
Okay.
They sell for 1 copper, I believe.
Oh, do they? Okay.
So they're basically worthless.
So, well, I got a couple in my bags, and I don't know what I'm going to do with them. I'll maybe get that copper eventually out of them. But what I have done, and maybe you can call me crazy for doing this, because they have been so rewarding in terms of the amount of AA for them, what I've kind of done over the past few weekends is I get up on a Saturday or Sunday morning, and I kind of sign myself into the game. Immediately go over to wherever the next PQ is going to happen and park myself, and then I'll go about the house and do my chores or my tasks or whatever I have on hand for that day, and just know every hour, oh, I got to go back to the PC. I'll participate in that PQ for a couple of minutes, do what I need to do, get my reward, and then I'll move myself over to the next PQ, park myself, and go off and, you know, do laundry, vacuum, clean the bathroom, whatever I have, whatever it may be around the house. And then just keep coming back every hour. I spend probably, you know, 12 hours on a weekend logged in, but I'm really only playing for a couple of minutes at the top of every hour. And heck, the Ring War sometimes, I've been in Ring Wars that are done by 6 minutes past the hour.
Mm-hmm.
So there's very little time commitment to doing them. So I can play for 10 or 15 minutes and then go about and do my stuff around the house for another 45 minutes and just keep coming back. So it's a great way for me, at least, to still get AAs, and because I'm not 300 yet, and continual leveling like that with little risk, not to say that there's no risk in dying or that sort of thing, and not having to lock myself into a group or an instance run and still get what I consider decent rewards in terms of AA.
Now, you say you're taking the AA.
Yes.
Do you find, especially on the Storm Gorge public quest, that you're getting more AA from the reward than you are deaths that you know the XP debt that you lose?
Absolutely, because I would say if I play smart, and I think as a healer, there's probably a different way to be playing smart than say necessarily a ranger such as yourself. If I'm playing smart and I'm there for AA. Yes, it far outweighs it. You shouldn't die during a Storm Gorge PQ, and it's frustrating when I do because I think some people, when I group, I expect a certain amount of smart play from them, and sometimes there isn't all that. And, you know, maybe what I mean by smart play is on Stormgorge, I'm the healer. I've got one DPS on one side of the whole encounter, and I got another guy on the other side, and they're outside heal range. So all I'm doing is literally running around through this sea of toons looking for the people in my group if they need healing or curing or something like that. Or I got some tank who thinks, gee, there's 20 mobs here. Let me hit my AE taunt. They all start whacking at him. He goes down like there's no tomorrow. Then the next thing you know, I got all the healing aggro and I'm going down too. Was that smart? Certainly not, in my opinion. So sometimes it's not always fun to be in a group in healing, especially on Stormgorge. Ring War, much different. There's pretty much single target. You don't have all the adds and whatnot going on during that one. So if I play smart, yeah, it certainly outweighs it. If I get into I'll call it an unsmart group like that, like those last scenarios I was describing, at some point I'll say to myself, you know, to heck with them. They're on their own. If they're not going to play smart or they're not going to help me help them, they're on their own. I'm going to target through the Siege Marshal and I'm just going to nuke and nuke and nuke.
I can see that. I mean, I've been in different types of groups. I've been around people who nobody knows what's going on and everybody's just kind of poking away. That was kind of early on. I've been around people who, you know, who basically come and take charge, and they know exactly what's going on, and they tell, you know, they know how to get people or to convey information to get people to do the right things or the, you know, go through the script kind of. But I think that's kind of what's neat about the public quest, one night neat thing. There's no way I'd ever be raiding with people from some of the high-end raid guilds if it weren't for public quests. You know what I mean? I mean, I see people out there who I wouldn't even see otherwise. They're hiding in their guild hall and then they are in their, you know, raid zones or whatever. I can poke around and inspect their gear and stuff like that. You know what I mean? You get to meet people who maybe are guildless. You get to meet people maybe who are casual players that you don't necessarily run into, and you actually get to interact with them. So I think I enjoy the public quests a lot for many, many reasons other than the rewards.
And you're absolutely right. When you're at these, you see everything from the high-end, end-game, top-tier raiding folks down to the guy who's still running around in level 50 master-crafted gear. It's frustrating sometimes when you're grouped with that fella.
Have you actually seen someone in level 50 master-crafted gear?
Well, no, I'm making an exaggerated point, but you know what I mean. You see people from all ends of the play spectrum at PQs, and that's nice. I think you're right. You get to see people outside of their, if you want to call it, traditional element.
Yeah.
And you get tells from folks. There are a good opportunity to learn and, like you say, inspect other people and see what they're doing or how their gear is lined up and stuff like that. So, yeah, I think they're really positive. I've enjoyed them. If there's one thing I wish they would change, if I could, Stormgorge, that supply runner, you can't have him running into those sea of people. I think he should stop at the door or something. Even with a targeting macro, it's hard to get to him and find out where he is all the time because it's just a sea of humanity around him.
Yeah, I know what you mean, but I wonder sometimes whether if he stopped further back or went somewhere else with all the people running to him, wouldn't the mobs just go there anyway?
Maybe. And the other thing is, I don't know if they've changed this yet, but there's times when you can be rezzed, when you do die and you rez yourself or revive yourself, right? You're right into the thick of the encounter.
Yeah, that's happened to me.
That is very frustrating. So I hope that they could maybe move that revive point to be a little further off.
Yeah.
Not so far that you're, say, removed from the PQ or you're going to lose credit running back or something like that. But I've popped myself right back in and there's like mobs standing right there and, you know, one or two shots and I'm dead again.
The only other problem I've had with the PQs is the lag.
Yeah. It's getting better, though. Would you say it's getting far better than it was before?
Maybe. I don't really know, to be honest. I think some of it's on my end. Honestly, the Stormgorge one, I still have problems. I just look at the ground. It's just safer that way. Somebody actually, this was one of the earlier times that I was doing the PQ and, you know, people, you know, use the Mug of Might to make the Siege Marshal all huge and I was looking at the ground to sort of stop lagging so badly and be able to actually participate in the fight. And then somebody says, oh, look, I've never seen him that big before. And when someone says that, you have to look up. So I made the mistake of actually looking up, and I got to see a humongous siege marshal for about 2 seconds. And then my screen basically halted and just stayed that way until I rebooted my PC. Then when I came back in, I ended up in a different zone. I get back in the zone I was in, and I ended up losing out on the best reward. But, yeah, so I try not to look up.
Well, I got to tell you, Allie, whenever I hear somebody say, look at the size, that thing's huge, of course I'm going to look.
Of course. How can you not?
But as a healer, I'm used to looking at the wall or staring at the ground anyways. That's second nature. That's standard play style for me.
Okay.
So I'm used to that. But I will say, compared to what it was at DOV launch, the Storm Gorge lag is light years ahead. It is not completely solved, but it is much better, much, much better than it was before.
Okay, so shall we move on to our second email?
We shall.
All righty. This one is from Sprouts on the Freeport server. Let me read you his subject line first. Is that a little man hacking and slashing away in your pocket? Or are you just happy to see me? To Dell. Unfortunately, or fortunately, you will never step foot on the Freeport server. And I'll never leave the land of the free. Like two ships passing in the night. Mine being the slightly larger and more robust ship. On subject. That's disappointing news about the selling items that you trade skill. But with the new trade skill rules, provisioning shouldn't be such a mother to train anymore. Now, on Allie's view of a phone app giving an advantage to those who have smartphones, I have to interject here due to the fact that those without jobs have a clear advantage over me. Maybe not so much in the real life, but in the gaming world, I would never be able to keep up. Not to mention my family obligations. That's a someone without family would be able to take advantage of. I really think there's always someone that will have an advantage, or groups of people that will have an advantage. On a side note, I also have a dumb phone, but would seriously consider buying a PSP2 if it had the same apps or games. Oh, and Dell, I have two Dell monitors. Holds arms out, drops the mic, and walks off the stage. Yes, that just happened.
Well, let me say this. Sprouts has a lot of chutzpah for coming on our podcast and pulling a stunt like that. Nobody drops the mic on our stage. And about his more robust ship, let me say this. Dude, one word. Titanic.
Didn't Titanic sink?
Holds out his arms, because I can, drops it, and walks off stage, dragging it behind. I went there. I think Sprouts has a very good topic that he brings up here. A little bit what we were talking about before with the mobile apps and whether or not if gameplay was extended to some type of mobile app where folks could play without being at their desk, at their PC, and whether or not that gives players an advantage or disadvantage. Allie, what's your take on all that?
Well, I sort of see a difference between people who have an advantage because they have more time to play and people who have an advantage because they have newer, more robust, to use a word from Sprouts, technology or whatever it might be. I guess the difference being one requires an investment of time and gameplay and effort. The other simply requires an investment of cash. I guess I sort of side with the investment of time as being more valid. And maybe that's a wrong, quote-unquote, view, but I sort of like, I'm kind of okay with people who don't have jobs, who, you know, or who have, you know, the luxury of not having to work or whatever it is, that they can play and maybe roll 12 tunes and play them equally well and invest all this time, and or they're single and no kids, and you know what I mean? Those people who actually invest time in the game, play the game, and max their characters or do whatever it is that they do, I guess I give them a little bit more, they have more of a right. That sounds terrible. I guess then, in my opinion, someone who just has an advantage because they have spent money on something that enables them to get ahead. Now, I don't think that this app, the phone app that we were talking about, does anything to give anyone a particular advantage at this point. We were just sort of like projecting about what they might use it for in the future. And some of those things that are the unknown, quote unquote, might be a little scary because we just don't have any of the details because they don't exist. So maybe my mind's getting ahead of me a little bit about what it might be used for. But I kind of think that's an unfair advantage without being deserved, whereas people who spend the time have deserved that.
I think this is a little bit of a religious discussion where there's no right or wrong answer, but everybody kind of has an opinion, and that's a good thing. I kind of look at it as there are, for lack of better terms, two currencies out there that we as individuals have to spend in our MMO. We have one currency being time, the ability to spend more time in front of the PC or whatever, clicking buttons, camping mobs, playing games, doing mini quests or whatever. And the other currency is real life, greenbacks, dollars, money, whatever. Each person might have one or the other or a balance of both. Generally speaking, people with more time have less money, and vice versa, people with more money more than likely have less time. So, and that's based on your station in life, your age, your background. There's a lot of things that go into that. So I have to say, you know, I think at one point in my MMO career, if you want to call it that, I would have been on a hard line on the, you know, just say no to real money currency. Absolutely, positively no. The real measure of Uber play is you putting in the time and you doing research and you sitting there doing the thing in front of the game, and whatever I think the game is at that point. I think over time I have softened like ice cream in the sun again. Well, now money is part of that equation. It wasn't. Everybody before paid the same amount, had the same unlimited access. Whether or not you chose to take advantage of that was your choice. So, you know, where are people on this time versus what I will call real world currency spectrum? Well, there's a lot of things that can go into that. And I don't know to say, well, gee, just because he doesn't have time, he shouldn't be able to invest money to a solution. You know, be it a mobile app, be it a faster computer, be it a more computers, so therefore you can have more accounts, that sort of thing. So it's very difficult to say a black and white answer to this concept. Mm-hmm. Because I don't think there is a right or wrong answer. A lot of it comes from where we are as individuals in our own individual lives and what's going on around us. You know, some of us have, you know, zero kids, two kids, three kids, 10 kids. Well, does the guy who has 10 kids out there probably has less time than the guy with only one kid, right? So, you know, does that make him a worse player? Well, maybe, maybe not. He just doesn't have the time to invest. But what if he had more money to invest? Should he be penalized for that because of where he is in his life or things going on for him? Don't know. And I think as I've gotten older, my opinions on that have changed. I'm no longer necessarily maybe the kid in my parents' basement, you know.
Yeah.
Who and so I realize I see how time has become a currency where before I had almost an unlimited supply of it because I didn't have any responsibilities in the real world. Over as I've gotten older, I have less of that form of currency, but fortunately more of the other type of currency. I have more money because I'm older, right, a little bit further in my career and that sort of stuff with my real world job. So I think it's a balancing act, and I don't know. I will say, though, recently when we did the previous show, I had a dumb phone. I do now have a smarter phone, which I'm very pleased with, and I'm enjoying immensely. Not so much the EQ2 mobile app because it never seems to work for me just right. I get a lot of disconnects and whatnot. So I guess I don't know where I'm going with this point other than there's no – I don't believe there's a black and white right or wrong answer to this concept. It depends on who you are, where you are, and what your outlook is.
Yeah, I think you definitely have that hit the nail on the head there. And I wonder if my opinion will change later, given different circumstances. I also think that, like, the gaming industry has changed around us in the, 7 years the game's been out.
Absolutely. And if you go back to EverQuest 1, how long, 12 years for that game.
Yeah. So, I mean, things have changed. And, maybe my opinion, I'm not even really sure where I draw the line in my mind. Some things I feel sort of strongly about at this stage still. Anyway, it's all just we're talking about sort of imagined things anyway, because this app doesn't really do anything for you in game to give you an advantage anyway. So
right, but it's a good conceptual discussion to think about.
Yeah, certainly is. So we had another email. Do you want to do the next one?
Sure. I will not say who this email is from. Let me just read it as is, and we'll see what happens.
Okay.
The subject line is "Okay, now you've done it." So this is already starting out well. Okay. Hi, Penge Finches. Okay, if you can't cope with her name, call me Horsemeat. Not Horsemite, just Horsemeat. SOE, for some reason, won't let you start a name with horse, but whores is all right. Go figure. And yes, while I still go to the Green Dragon and Bywatch Dance on a Friday night, I'm back in EQ2 after listening to you guys. I couldn't stay away and resubbed. Horsemeat, my little Froglock provisioner, currently working her way up to the mid-80s so she can follow Penge along the crafter line leading to the flying mount and the prayer shawl. Loving my time back. Oh, how I've missed the intelligent conversation of level 9 chat. Anyway, SOE should thank you and Allie, as it is EQ2 talk that lured me back and gave them a chance to loot my bank account again. How weird, too. Opened up LON and I've got 10 choose your own. I forget the right name. Free packs of cards. And what do I get as a loot card? The Stein of the Alesmith. Loving the expansion. Thank you, Domino, for all the neat trade skill quests there are. The Flying Mount, the Prayer Shawl, the Gathering Obsession Plus Quest Pack Horse. Wonderful stuff. I still reckon doing it on a PvP server is the only way to really achieve, though. What I was referring to on my earlier email was that on EQ Tuesday, Dell would say on numerous occasions regarding the game, it's all about Delmon. So it just tickled me when Dell said the other cast, rather self-righteously, Allie, it's not all about you. Anyway, that training dummy won't crush itself. I do believe you two have got me hooked back into Evercrack 2. Cheers, Penge Finches and Horsemeat of Dagafin.
Dagafin?
Yeah, that's what he wrote, Dagafin. Is that like some... Maybe he misspelled Nagafin.
I don't know.
Maybe that's what it is. He meant, where's D in relation to N on the keyboard? Not even close. Okay, so not sure what server he's from.
But he says Venacore.
Right. So he's on PvP. We'll say he's on PvP.
He's somewhere out there. Well, Penge, congrats on your Stein of the Alesmith. Don't try and use it in Thurgoodin, though, because guess what? Your discount card is not honored by the dwarves up there.
I'm still surprised that is like that. That's got to be a bug. And have you feedbacked that at all, that the Stein should take you to 30?
I did. Okay. I did. I wrote a little story about it, but I think it might be on purpose.
Okay.
I don't know. I haven't tried it again lately. I'll try it again. So Penge talks about a couple of things. The LON cards being one. Do you open your free packs?
Sadly, I don't.
Really?
And yeah, and I have to say I don't know why, other than I guess the best excuse, if I want to call it that, is laziness or forgetfulness. Don't know which. One of those two. I would probably say more forgetfulness about it than laziness, because it's only one click away.
Yeah, I think, yeah, it's got to be laziness. Or rather, forgetfulness. Sorry, you can fix that, right?
Yes.
Okay. Is there anything in there that you want?
If there were two things I want, I think would be, and I don't even remember what expansion they were from LON, would be the quest starter. I think it's cloaks or something. There's a cloaks that you had to get to start a quest, and access to the zone.
Yeah,
that those was a quest as well.
Yeah, I believe those are both. I know the cloaks are definitely from the Traveler's Pack. I'm still trying to get those. That's what I use my Selecta whatever. I don't remember what they're called either. That's what I use all mine for, is the Travelers, to try to get the cloaks. And the key, I think, is also from Travelers for that zone. That's what I want, too. I also want basically all the paintings, but quests trump paintings. Even if it's just one quest, I am still after it, because I've only got one of the cloaks.
I'm coming from the same point, both you and I, hardcore questers. So for me, the reward is the quest, not a house decorator, so paintings are not that appealing to me. If there was something else other than that quest starter, it would be exactly what Penn brings up here in the Stein of the Alesmith, because it's a nice way to travel, and it's kind of dwarfy sounding.
Yeah.
So that would be the other item I would want if I had my opportunity to get something.
Well, the paintings, I really, really, really like the paintings. Even if you're not into house decorating, the paintings are, I mean, you could decorate your whole house and have nothing but paintings in there. The artwork in these, I mean, the artwork on the LON cards to begin with is amazing. They have art from so many different people. There's a variety, and yet there's also some continuity between cards. Some of them, I would say a vast majority of them, are incredible. Incredible. And some of the prizes that we gave away, all of the posters in there are LON art. And in researching the you know, trying to find out the names of them, I had a chance to look over some of the old art, and they hired people from outside. I mean, they had internal people, but they actually hired artists, I believe, from outside to do a lot of these LON cards. And some of them are just absolutely amazing. They would be something you might actually hang in your real house.
Absolutely. I've always said one, say like fanfare item that I would absolutely plunk down real world hard cash for, if they had a uncut sheet of cards, even if it didn't have to be cards, but a poster of all the cards with their artwork that you could hang as a poster in your office or in your basement or something like that. Because like you say, there are so many different artists and so many different varieties of styles of drawing that make up all those cards. I think that would be an awesome thing to hang on the back of the door to my office. I would absolutely put that up, and I would pay tons and tons of real-world cash for something like that.
The LON cards, the free packs, if you don't open your packs, you know, go look on the LON website and see what in each blue cards in each pack you want, and just shoot for those packs. Man, I can't imagine not opening my free packs, Del. I can't believe you're sitting on. How many are you sitting on?
I would be embarrassed to admit what's a year's worth, maybe plus.
Really?
Yeah. You know what? Every so often I remember, I should go do that. But then I get sidetracked onto something else, and a senior moment moves in, and that moves out of my...
I can't have five packs in my pocket without opening them up. Unbelievable. You could be sitting on a quest.
I probably could be.
The dice don't roll until you open the pack, but whatever. So anyway, moving on.
All right.
So our next email is from Spiders. Dear Alicious, I'd write that Delmon character, but he doesn't seem to accept emails from classes not on his server. I think it's a thing against dirges from other servers. As far as this expansion, factions. Do the dailies and get them done. There are several quest lines related to gaining access to the instances, a Griffin mount to get, along with Tower of Frozen Shadow and everything related to that. My question is related on how does Delmon think of this expansion so far with its different elements before we even get into the raid zones? Did Delmon notice that the raid zones have both the option to zone into the normal and challenge version versus before when you had to make the mobs switch to challenge in the raid instances? Also, what is your guys' opinion on the public quest system and how they are working out? Love them, hate them, or could do without them? And a question for Delmon yet again. Has the noob gotten his ring of Dane Frostreaver 6th yet? Oh, and on the frustration part. All the Master Yale weapons from Sentinel's Fate lack crit, which is the biggie this expansion to have. Think raid buffed and ripping through mobs. My personal crit is in the neighborhood of 300% with a multi-attack not far behind. Quick hint about faction. The Cloudy Velium Jewel can be turned in for faction at the various vendors, Knowles, Rygor, and Thurgadin. These are obtained in the public quests I previously asked about. Also, we as listeners need an update on how you two are doing on AAs and quest progression across the two zones. Were there any quest hub areas that gave more trouble than others? Are you reading the quest or just click, accept quest, then go kill 10 rats? Signed, Spiders, Strike Guild, Crushbones Server. So he asks a lot of questions. He brings up a lot of points in this email. Let's just go down the line. Let's start with factions. What do you think of them? Do you think the factions give you enough of a challenge to being able to get adornments and gear and stuff like that?
Yeah, I don't mind factioning. It was a integral part of Velius from EQ1. Certainly factions are not implemented the same way, and that's okay. But they are in there nonetheless. I don't find them to be a hindrance to getting to stuff. Yes, it slows you down a little bit. I guess it makes you unable to consume all the content in less than 24 hours. But again, I don't see that as a bad thing. They're not that hard to do. They just require, as we were talking earlier, the currency of time to do them. I don't have a problem with doing them. I think they're okay. I kind of like them. It shows a little bit of work and effort that we kind of talk about. We want to feel like we accomplished something.
Yeah.
And to get up your faction makes you feel like you accomplished something. So I think it's a good thing. I do like it.
Yeah, I actually felt the same way. I agree with that. I think that having the factions in there, it requires a good amount of effort to get to the adornments and all that good stuff. And it's not just a matter of, you know, he with the most plat wins type of scenario. So I do think it's a good addition.
What you said, though, is true. They're difficult to do, but they're not insurmountable.
Yes.
Which I like.
Yeah, it gives you some challenge, but not some ridiculous challenge. How about he talks a little bit about Tower of Frozen Shadow, the times to access quest. How do you feel about that?
Again, I like access. I like that at times you're mitigated to getting into something until you accomplish something. I don't have a problem with that. However, I can see Sony's point about that because a long time ago they took out a lot of access quests. If you think back to classic EverQuest 2, boat rides to Zek and Enchanted Lands and Lava Storm and all those, all since long removed. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see them back again. They're a bit of a challenge, but they are not insurmountable. And there are certainly plenty of other things to do other than, say, necessary Tower of Frozen Shadow that will keep you busy. So it's not like you are completely gated from all the next content, just some of it. So I don't see a problem with it. I kind of like it, and I'm glad it's back.
Yeah, I do too. I think it's not necessarily back. I don't think it was gone because we had the woe access you had to do.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. Yeah,
I think that's still in the game. The times twos, you had to the what was the one from the last expansion. Sentinel's Fate was the Vigilant.
Yes.
Right? You had to have access to that too. You still have to have it. I never got that one because I just didn't care, I guess. This one I did get. I did get it.
Yay, oh, congrats.
Me. I'm very proud of myself. It's not just, I think, in my opinion, I really like having the access quest there, not just because it provides a challenge, not just because it is something you have to complete in order to go to the next thing. I think it's also a saving players from themselves in a little bit of a way. It's not just, well, you have to put in the effort and time and suffer in order to go to the next stage. No, I think there is also a little bit of a check against underpowered players, maybe. Mm-hmm. Maybe players who aren't ready to go have their asses handed to them. You know what I mean? I think maybe if you can complete it, maybe you're ready to scratch the surface and die in the first room or against the first mob or whatever. Whereas if you were to get access easily, you might have absolutely no business being in that times two zone because you're not geared enough. I like that.
And I think, too, with the way the access for this is set up in the same way for the Vigilance from the previous expansion was that only one person needs to zone you in. So right. You can have 11 people who haven't finished it yet and one who has. So it doesn't completely mitigate you from doing it. If someone in your raid party does have access, they can bring you in. Say, unlike what I was referring to earlier, the old school access quests, you couldn't zone into Zek unless you finished that quest, period. It wasn't right. Like somebody could bring you in.
Right, but I do think that even with that, it's pretty safe, I think, because in order to complete it, you have to go through Tower of Frozen Shadow, and you actually do have to go several times unless you're... Well, I don't even know if you can blow through it in a linear fashion. I think you might have to go back a few times. So it's kind of a way to, and you get gear drops and stuff like that along the way. So it's kind of a way to build up the force, the party, to be able to go accomplish, to go into the times two to begin with. I think it works out. It's sort of like basic training almost.
Yeah, so I think they've done a very good job in implementing the access that we have today in game.
On to the next thing. What does Delmon think of the expansion and the different elements? I think we've sort of touched a little bit, but in general, do you have like a general overview opinion of
the game? I'm going to overall give this 2 thumbs up to DOV at a very high level. Yes, there are things that I'm not super rah, rah, rah and all pumped about, but so far, overall, DOV, good expansion. Staying at a high level. I think there's a lot of things you could talk about underneath that. But just to answer this question very generally, I'm very pleased with what we've seen thus far.
I would have to agree with that, even though he didn't ask for Allie's opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I see what Allie is. Chopped liver. Okay, and what does Delmon think? Again, he wants to know what Delmon thinks. What is this? The Delmon Show? What do you think of the raid zones, the normal and challenge modes being separate? The entrance, how you get to choose those at the entrance, as opposed to having to click on the mob and choose challenge mode or regular mode?
I think good implementation, because I am sure, and it happened to my guild during Sentinel's Fate, was inevitably somebody lagged, somebody misclicked, somebody forgot to click, and you wound up with challenge mode, or you didn't wind up with challenge mode when you wanted challenge mode. So I'm sure what they had, although was a good system, was fraught with problems and mishaps. So what they have done this time is just separate them all together. You choose at the beginning, do you want A or do you want B? And there's no halfway through A becoming B or anything like that. So I think from a customer service point of view, this is a smarter solution, because I'm sure it has cut down on frustrations of people being or getting the wrong thing from what they wanted, be it wanting challenge mode or not wanting it and getting vice versa.
Well, I commend you for using the word fraught in a current day sentence. I've been mocked for using that word in the past.
Well, thank you. That's my word of the day. Everybody drink fraught.
Oh, boy. So moving on to the next thing. Spiders is full of topics.
He's very inquisitive, the spider.
He really has. He likes to give us a, like, it's like a, what do you call that when you shoot a shotgun? What do you call that?
Shooting a shotgun? A scatter shot?
Yeah. Like that. It's like 12 things. Here you go. Bang, 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 bang. Okay.
I feel like I'm applying for an EverQuest 2 job with all these questions.
Oh, right. Okay, so Public Quest we already talked about.
Yep.
Coldane Ring, did you finish?
Noob has not gotten his.
Me neither.
Noob hasn't even started. Well, I guess by starting it, it means having it in my journal because I clicked on something. That means as far as I've gotten. Again, a lot of things to do in I almost said EverQuest. A lot of things to do in DLV. Just haven't gotten to them all yet.
But that's a good thing because you know what? You got some time.
Yeah, and you know what? Can we pause on that?
Yep.
I am thrilled with the fact that I'm not one of those people who 24, 72 hours later after the expansion launch is saying, okay, what's next? I like to take my time. I like to smell the roses. I like to consume the content at my own pace because we have theoretically a year of this. And if you're done in the first month, well.
I don't think we have a year.
Okay. We have a while with this, right?
We have a few months. They're bringing more stuff in the game.
Right. But I don't want to burn through it all and then be sitting around twiddling my thumbs waiting for the next thing. I like to take my time and enjoy it.
I agree. And I've been, you know what? It's funny because the last expansion I wanted, I was holding myself back. I was trying to restrain myself from consuming the entire bag of chips at once, right?
Yes.
But I couldn't stop myself. I just gorged, right?
Mm-hmm.
This time, it's like it's keeping me from doing it. I there's so many things to do. There are so many things to do. I don't have to restrain myself. It's doing it for me. I'm really enjoying looking around. The stopping to smell the roses thing is a lot easier when you have a flying mount to go fly around and look at things in a different perspective. I am absolutely loving this expansion.
And you know, what you say there is a great point. We're talking about gorging ourselves on content. I think some of these, for lack of better terms, time sinks that we were talking about earlier in terms of doing faction daily quests, that sort of stuff, it's helping you with portion control a little bit. You've ripped open that bag of chips, you've woofed down some of them, but then you hit a layer where you have to pause and take that layer out before you can start gorging again. So I think it's good like that in that it's making the content go longer so that you're not consuming it all in 24 hours.
We need Weight Watchers to be our next sponsor, I think. So there's that. The frustration about gear, equipment, gear from Sentinel's Fate not being good enough. Let me just interject here. This is a humongous topic, I think.
Yes.
I started having a conversation with my husband about this out of nowhere. I just sort of was like, well, what do you think about this? And my thought was this. How do you put out an expansion that doesn't increase the level cap? How do you do that and make people not question whichever direction you go? Like if, for example, you make the raid gear in the new, I'm sorry, you make the quest gear or even like just the name drops or whatever, the overland stuff. If you make that gear not as good as raid gear in the last expansion, you're not incentivizing anyone to try the new stuff, right?
Correct.
You're not incentivizing anyone to move ahead, to go forward. You're incentivizing them to stay back and do the old stuff. But if you give them all this great stuff in the new expansion, you're not incentivizing, you're basically incentivizing people to totally disregard the last expansion. Like, what's the point of going into any of the raid zones from Sentinel's Fate anymore? At all? Is there a point? It certainly isn't part of the progression anymore, unless you don't have DOV as an expansion to look at. And this was sort of like, we were just like dogs chasing tails. We kept coming to the same point at which there was no answer.
And I think I mentioned this I don't know where I mentioned it, maybe in a previous show or maybe just talking in group with folks. Every expansion comes out, they have to come up with something new. One of the things we as players rake them over the coals about with Sentinel's Fate was, okay, I got my shiny sword from the quote tier one mobs. Now I'm doing the harder mode, challenge mode, or the next harder thing, and I'm getting the shinier sword. And all that shinier sword is 0.1% better, or 0.2 or 0.3 better. Mm-hmm. Well, why did I spend all this effort in dying and learning new strats and working hard at it for a 0.3% upgrade? That's no upgrade. I worked far harder than 0.3%. Without them just every expansion adding more pluses to something, right? And now we're to the point where we're past 100%.
Yeah.
They have to put in these new mechanics that kind of cause you to have to restart and build all over again, because if not, all you're doing is adding more pluses. And they kind of have to break themselves out of that just adding more pluses scenario. So I think that's why this time around at DOV, we're starting to see a reinvention of play mechanics, because we're kind of hitting the high water mark in just adding pluses and procs to things. We'll just have to keep making procs that proc more and bigger, and we'll just give mobs more hit points with stronger hitting AEs. And that's not very inventive.
I guess my issue was like the raid zones pretty much, because group zones you can always go back and do, and you're not doing it for the gear for the most part, unless it's for alts or whatever. The raid zones, though, kind of the point is for the gear, isn't it?
The game is about killing mobs and taking their stuff, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's like, it doesn't bother me like two expansions ago or three expansions ago, those raid zones dropping gear that I have absolutely no use for whatsoever. That doesn't bother me because it's just simply old enough that now it's just like nostalgic to go back and sort of walk down memory lane. Whereas just the last expansion, which is 1 year ago, those zones, those are still viable because there's no level cap increase, but they're pointless to do because the gear is pointless.
So the gear is pointless because the mechanics of which you're measured against now is pointless.
Right.
You're right, it's still the same tier, but we really did shift gears quite a bit in terms of what it takes to be successful.
So now those zones will be sort of fodder until, you know, just nothing, until next year, presumably when they raise the level cap, which I'm guessing at completely.
Right, but if they raise the level cap but keep doing this, you have to have 250 mitigation to be successful. The gear coming out of Sentinel's Fate will never get you up to speed enough. You really need this new mechanic gear to be successful. So
right, I mean, the value in Sentinel's Fate will now become nostalgia.
Absolutely. More so
not about gear.
Yeah, more so than previous expansions that it was a very steep increase. Previous expansion versus previous tier.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going back to, like, when you're leveling up an alt, you don't go run labs to go get relic gear.
Not anymore.
No, I mean, you don't do that. There's no point, right?
Exactly.
You go back there. I've gone back several times for the nostalgia aspect. So now we just have to wait a year for Sentinel's Fate to ferment a little bit.
That's yeah. Funny. Yeah, I agree.
All right. Okay, we need to move ahead here. Cloudy, Valium, Jewel turning in for faction. Yeah, we know about that. What do you feel about it?
Like it. I think it's a good way to accelerate the gaining of factions as opposed to just doing the dailies. It's another alternative.
I agree. Gives you an additional way to get faction. You don't have to grind.
And keeps the PQs current after you've gotten all your gear.
Yep, I agree. Okay, how are we doing on AAs?
I am in slacker category. I believe I'm at 282.
Wow, I hit 300 on March 26th.
That's why I'm the slacker.
And quest progression, where are you at?
Pretty much finished up Great Divide. Have barely set foot in Eastern Wastes.
Oh.
I am really taking my time in smelling a lot of roses mm-hmm. along the way. For some reason, I think even more so than last time when I said I'm going to take my time and enjoy it, I'm even taking more time to enjoy it.
I'm a little bit ahead of you, but I think primarily because I had some sick days and some vacation time when you were at work.
Yeah, and the other thing is right now I'm semi-distracted by a side project, so it's affecting, you know, my running around and questing and doing instances and that sort of stuff. So hopefully that side project will eventually wind down.
Hopefully it's not another podcast.
No, it is not.
You better not be cheating on me, Del.
I would never cheat on you, Allie.
Have you had any trouble spots with questing? Is there such a thing?
There's one place, well, there's one challenge I've come to, and I'm almost, I don't know if I want to admit this. I'm slaughtering gnolls in Great Divide right now and lowering my faction so that I can get one quest. That's a faction-based quest. So I've actually kind of slowed myself down even further because I don't want to keep doing the dailies and going up so that I have to go down even further to get this one quest and then come back up again.
What is it?
There's a couple of faction-based quests. There's one with the gnolls and one with the Othamir. That are kind of quests that help you dig yourself out of the hole if you did over damage your faction. So right now I'm damaging faction just so I can get those quests.
Are you going to tell me what they are?
I don't know them off the top of my head.
Well, you'll have to tell me after the show.
I can do that.
I'll add them to my list. Wow. Didn't know about those. Now I have work to do. Thanks a lot.
Well, you got to wreck your faction. And I know that's not popular with a lot of folks, especially for faction-based merchants.
Yeah.
But I guess you and I, as true hardcore questers, will do something as foolish as that and then fix it again later.
Yeah, I still have some stuff to do in other expansions, previous expansions. So, and I think we've kind of covered this topic. Have we been reading the quests? Yes.
Yes.
Both of us have. And enjoying it very, very much, very much.
I got to say, I know we talked a little bit about it, the Othamirs. I read them. It tugged at my heartstrings.
You have heartstrings?
I have this little, what's the little Grinch heart? Yes, it was beating.
The little shriveled raisin of a heart. So we have another email. I think it's your turn, Del.
Yes, I'm up again. And another hit from Sprouts. And Sprouts says, again, hello. Great themed podcasts. Love them both in their own awkward ways. Let me interject. I'm not really sure how to interpret that, but thank you. Getting straight to the point this time, are there any furniture items that allow storage to be accessed by players on another account? For instance, if I gave my friend access to my house, could he then go in and retrieve a set of armor I made for him that I left in a piece of furniture designed to hold said armor? If not, why not? Would this cause major problems in the world of Norrath? If yes, then this was probably the shortest conversation piece in podcast history. On a non-game note, don't you hate when the weather changes and your hair has so much static electricity in it, your coworkers ponder whether or not you've been sitting in your cube rubbing balloons on your head all day? Merry EQ2 days to you all, and to all a good night. Signed, Sprouts and others. I'm at a loss for words right now, Allie. I don't know how to respond to rubbing balloons in my cube at work and making my hair stand on end. Unless that's code for something, I don't know.
I don't think it's code.
I certainly hope it's not code.
I think he's just goofing and, you know, whatever off the top of his head is comes to mind as he's emailing us, I think that's great.
Fair enough. I will just say that's okay, as long as it's his own balloons that he's rubbing.
That's funny. So, furniture items that allow storage to be accessed by players on another account.
No, there are not, and I don't think there needs to be.
Well, let me ask you this. I wasn't 100% sure about this. What about the salesman's crates?
Yes, but if you put it up there, you run the risk of somebody else buying it.
No, using it as storage, not putting it up for sale, placing, you know, putting the thing on your broker, then placing the item in your home, right? Giving your alt trustee access. Doesn't the trustee have access to that box or no?
No, I don't think so. Not in the salesman crate, because that has things that have to go onto the broker, I believe.
But I know, but I mean, you know how I can put things in my broker boxes and not put them up for sale, just store them there.
But only you have access to them.
Right, but if I place that in my house, that's what I'm getting at.
I don't believe they can get it, no.
Oh, okay.
I'm going to be honest, I'm not sure about that. But here's why I say this is kind of a moot question. Rather than put it in the house, why not just mail it to them?
Because that costs 50 copper.
Okay, fair enough. Fair enough.
And you have stacks and stacks and stacks of things to send them.
True.
And you have to wait half an hour.
Okay, all right. I just say use the mail.
Or because you have two accounts, log them in at the same time.
Well, I think he's referring to his friend, not his other own account. Oh, I think he's referring to his friend.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
So that's why I say, and he
need
only
somebody with another account, an actual other account that isn't a box.
Right. Allie was very confused by this concept of friend.
Oh, I know. I don't understand this. I thought everybody boxed. No, I thought you were one of my boxes.
Yeah. There's no such thing as friends. They're just alternate tunes that I play that I own accounts for.
I really thought I was, you know, co-hosting this podcast with myself.
No problem. So I think that would be my – if it's only one item, I can see the point that you make, Allie, about what if you have stacks and stacks of stuff. But if it's just the one item, the mail is probably the best solution.
Would you mail stuff to your friend?
If I had a friend, I'd wait for them to sign on and then run over and hand it to them.
What if your friend lives in Australia and you're never in the same – on in the same time?
I would quit my job and wait for that person. We'd do it on the weekend. Yes, weekends.
But they're sleeping.
At some point, they're awake.
What if it's
set my alarm and get up.
What if it's Mr. Hyde.
You're not going to find a solution where I'm going to spend 50 copper to mail you something, no matter how hard you try.
Wow, that's really bad. You would rather quit your job than spend 50 copper.
Again, it comes back to that time versus real world currency discussion of which do I have more of.
Seriously?
I'm only goofing.
I know you are, but you're nuts.
I am.
Okay. Now we have a lovely email from somebody we've never heard from before, which we always love to have as new listeners. This is from, I think it's pronounced Kana. From the Freeport server. Greetings, Mighty Delmon.
I already like this person right then and there. New favorite listener right there. Read that again, could you?
Greetings, Mighty Delmon.
I hear the choir of angels in my head singing.
Greetings, Mighty Delmon and fair Lady Alicious. Make more podcasts now. Seriously. And among her exclamation points is a number one, I would like to point out.
I like that.
Me too. And then she says, pretty please. I love trade skilling, but started showing nervous ticks from all the whoosh, chop, chop, rah, rah, crash, and the occasional ouch sound effects when countering. So I started listening to your great podcast. The nervous ticks are now gone. Thank you very much. But I've listened through most of your podcasts now, going back through time, and I fear the nervous ticks will return when I run out of podcasts. So for the sake of my sanity, please, please make more podcasts. So in the spirit of your podcast, what have I been up to lately? Well, I've been busy avoiding reaching level 90 adventurer, and here's why. I'm a noob. I play a paladin. And have reached level 89 almost entirely soloing. I didn't mean to. I fully intended to group up along the way. Around level 30, I joined a great guild, telling the guild master I had no experience tanking. From other games I've played, I've usually been the DPS or healer, never ever tanking. He took me in anyway. Needed a tank, and he was more than willing to teach me the necessary moves. I did join in a few groups and raids with the guild, but once I reached level 60, the guild kind of fell apart. The officers moved on to other games, and the rest of us scattered all over, and I never got around to joining another guild. Well, I'm on my own at the moment, and I can't really teach myself. Now I find myself at level 89, not knowing what my threat buttons look like. I must shamefully admit I don't know my class. Blushes. And I fear that once I reach level 90, the people I group up with will expect me to know that. I try mentoring down, taking pugs through low-level dungeons, but that doesn't teach me anything other than I can trample through anything and don't have to worry at all about keeping my threat high. At one point or another, I will join another guild that will hopefully take the time to teach me what I need to know. Because I am more than willing to learn. But all this made me think, and I would like your thoughts on this. Many players probably find themselves in my position, not knowing their class well enough. And soloing through the game, as it is today, won't teach you much. And I don't think the concept of mercenary NPCs, quote-unquote, will be integrated into the game anytime soon. But what if SOE made those solo instances where the intent of the instance was to learn your class? Like a tanking instance where you enter alone, but then quote-unquote group up with mage and healer NPCs, and it's your job to make sure the mobs are trying to squish you and not the cloppies. And say a DPS instance where you learn to do DPS but not over DPS, so the NPC tank can keep up the threat. And I don't think this type of instance would be of use only to noobs like me. Even if you're in a raid guild, you probably don't raid all the time, and you could hone your skills in these type of instances in between raiding, trade skilling, house decorating, etc. Try out various combinations, various gear, etc. See what works, what's a complete failure, in your own time, when your guildmates are busy with other stuff. And you get to try out stuff without wiping the entire group or raid. It's only your rear end and that of the NPCs that's at stake. And if you don't get any loot in these type of instances, it will still force players to group up with other players to get the great gear. Anyway, that's on the top of my Frostfell wish list for next year. Okay, already a long email, but wanted to give my take on the extended server on which I play. I played EQ2 shortly after it launched, back in the days, but left for that other game. Now I have returned. At first, I was planning on signing up on a live server, but in the end, my choice went to the extended server. I'm a gold subscriber, so I pay the $15 a month, but my husband doesn't play very often, so he's on the silver account. My mother, yes, I play with my mom, plays even less, so she's on the very basic bronze account. Friends and family from that other game pops in from time to time to play a little, to chat, etc. On live, this wouldn't have been an option. People can't just pop in for an hour and play time and then forget all about it for a month or so without wondering if it's worth the money. So for me, extended is the perfect place to be. Anyway, stop reading my letter and start making more podcasts. I feel the ticks returning. Thanks again for great entertainment. Signed, Kana, the level almost 90 paladin of the Freeport server.
Well, that's a great email, and perhaps we should hook Kana up with our other famous Freeport player, Sprouts.
Perhaps. More podcasts?
Yeah, more podcasts. I think you hear the pause in my voice there, don't you?
Yeah. Well, let's just say it's something to discuss at a future date.
It's on our wish list as well. But again, as we were talking earlier, time is a currency.
Yep.
And these podcasts, when folks listen, I would just say generally, when folks listen for, say, a 90-minute podcast, which is about what we average or so, for us, that's probably 10 hours worth of work to produce 90 minutes in terms of research, recording, editing, re-editing, re-recording, posting it, and all that sort of stuff. So there is a lot of work and stuff that goes on behind the scenes. It's not just for us, just 90 minutes of us sitting down to talk, which is what you guys get to hear in the end. So I think we would all love to make more, but time being the currency that it is sometimes predicates that.
Well, we can hope to win the lottery and have lots of extra time on our hands.
Perhaps. Absolutely. Although, Allie, during the Braille Day cast, you were all for doing more podcasts.
I know. Although I don't know what I was on.
I don't know who that – well, we all know what you were on. I think it was called Yellowtail.
Yes.
I don't
mythical beast.
What happened to that, Allie? But maybe someday – hey, yeah, you're right. Maybe Yellowtail will wind up as a mob in game.
Oh, man. I'm in trouble. Yeah, I mean, that episode, I was all sorts of, you know, cheerleader for a bunch of stuff. But, of course, we would love to do more podcasts. Of course, we would love to even do, I don't know, one of the things we had talked about doing was some short, quick ones in between. It doesn't help, though, as far as, like, the production aspect of it, because it actually takes just as much time to produce, even if you only talk for 10 minutes. Well, maybe it doesn't take quite that long. But in any case, there are all these other moving parts that have to be dealt with. Maybe. I don't know. We'll leave it up in the air.
Yes, but we're excited to hear that folks want to hear more of us. That tickles us pink.
Or orange.
Did I just say tickles us pink?
Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Shall I nuzzle you?
After the podcast. But I thought Kenya here had a really, really interesting topic, and it's something we have batted around certainly in previous podcasts, and maybe that's where she came up with the conversation for a little bit, was the concept of knowing one's class. Kenya suggested, what if SOE was to make a solo instance designed to help teach you your class? I thought about that for a little while, and I'm like, it sounds good in concept, but I wonder what's the return in terms of would players really play it, and would they really, really learn their class, or, you know, kind of what she suggests here is, you know, there'd be these NPCs, not mercenary NPCs necessarily, but I would say that they're almost going to kind of operate like that a little bit, where, you know, so if I'm a healer, for example, well, then I go to this instance and I'm automatically given a tank and I'm given some DPS and I got to heal them and that sort of stuff. Really, though, what I'm really learning is just how to deal with the AI, because the AI is going to do the same thing every time and it's probably going to take about the same amount of damage. So I'm going to, once I do it once or twice, I'm going to become a master of how to beat a solo instance. And I think the greatest challenge, though, about knowing your class is really knowing how to play your class with real people. Because real people don't do the same thing every time. And I think when we talk about PvP, sometimes that's why PvP is very exciting versus PvE. PvP doesn't do the same thing every time. People are reacting. They're casting different spells. They're doing things. Or in Battlegrounds, being the same thing. They don't do the same thing. It's a different encounter every time. So I think if you were to build a solo instance like that, it's just going to be PvE where the mob is going to do the same thing, the NPCs are going to do the same thing, and you're not really learning anything. You're just learning how to beat the AI script and not really learning how to play with real people and all the bizarre things that real people do while they're playing, I think. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I guess it does. When I first read this idea, I was like, man, this person is an effing genius. I love this idea. I thought it was fantastic. And I thought, you know, yeah, don't put gear in there. Maybe don't even put XP in there. Well, put something in there to make people do it. But I thought it was a fantastic idea. I would totally do those on my alls who I have no clue whatsoever how to play. Like even my highest level alt, I kind of only semi know how to play in theory. So I would love to do something like that. If they actually had those, I would totally do them. Now, is it going to teach me the ins and outs of what real people do on a raid? Absolutely not. Is it going to help me scratch the surface and learn the basics of my tune so that I can learn the next building block on top of that, you know, to actually be able to deal with real people? Some of my alts are healers. There's no stinking way I'm going to bring out my quote-unquote healer and pretend that I actually am a healer and can keep a group alive, of real people. I don't want to risk real people's lives with my lame alt. I think it would be awesome to be able to go into something like this and practice without, you know, because it's very hard to solo certain classes. And I don't want to risk other people and risk my own reputation if I have one. I don't think it's a good idea unless I know what the hell I'm doing. Now, I just thought this was such a fantastic idea to be able to create something like a training dummy, only blown up into an instance. Well, what if you could inject some sort of advanced AI? Maybe AI can change in the future. You don't know. Maybe they're not going to be like PvE, you know, like an instance with a script that you could, maybe it changes up. Maybe it can be unpredictable. Maybe they can inject some sort of unpredictability in there. But even if they don't, I think it could help you learn the first building block that you can then take the next step and build up to.
Yeah, I guess I don't want to poo-poo any more on this idea, but one other challenge that I was thinking of while you were just saying that is these instances with this AI, even if it is as intelligent as it can possibly be and really somehow masters and simulates real people, you would have to build, I would think, 24 of these things, because being a monk tank is very different from being a plate tank like a Shadow Knight. So you would have to build all these extra variables into it to teach each person their class. I mean, even though troubadours and rangers are both scouts, they're two very different types of scouts. So you'd probably need two very different AI instances to deal with that. So I don't know. I think the best way, you were just saying you don't want to damage your reputation. Absolutely. What little we do have, sometimes we don't want to make it any worse, right? Yeah. But I think you just got to get in a group and go, listen, guys, I'm brand new. I'm a total noob. I leveled myself. I'm trying to learn. You got to get into a guild where folks might be more understanding and more forgiving, and you can talk to other players who have been playing, who have built up experiences and that sort of stuff, and can talk you through things and reach out and make those sort of contacts. I'm certainly sure that Kanya here is not alone on Freeport in this scenario. I don't think she would be alone on any other server in this type of scenario. There's a lot of players who went like that. Both you and I admit we have alts that we've done that too. Got them from 1 to 90 solo, and now it's like, well, I'm pretty embarrassed to take this tune out and play them. Mm-hmm. So I think the best way is just a little bit of baptism by fire, and I don't think leaving it to Sony to invent a solution. Now, maybe inventing a tutorial that will guide you through and show you buttons and highlight things and maybe have a voiceover to explain it is better and might help you learn some of those nuances that you might have missed along the way. It certainly won't help you put them into practice, but at least it's a walkthrough or a sample or a guide, for example, about a particular class.
Well, I think the tutorial thing sounds like a great idea. In theory, it's just that a tutorial in an MMO, the way we've seen tutorials is basically like a bunch of reading. People don't...
I agree. That's why I said voiceover.
Voiceover is not going to teach you anything either. When I think of a tutorial, I'm thinking of like, you know, like, I don't know, you pick up a PlayStation 2 game or, sorry, we're on PlayStation 3 now. I don't know. I'm so far behind. Whatever. You pick up a game you've never tried before. You throw it in. There's always a tutorial. And it's not a bunch of reading explaining press this, press this, press this. It's okay, here, learn how to punch, practice to do this. And you practice a few times. You're not losing anything for it, but you're not gaining anything for it. You're practicing. Practice shooting your gun in this way. Practice flying your airplane in this way. Practice sneaking around and picking up objects in this way, right? That's a tutorial, not reading a bunch of manuals.
I agree. I agree with that absolutely. Although I think in the scenario you're describing, a solo person game, which a lot of console games are, they solo, but they might have online versions later. You start out solo, so you have that opportunity to learn playing the game by yourself. Say, take a game like Madden 2011 or something, right? It's the same game versus the computer as it is versus another person. It's the same game. So once you learn it by yourself, you can play head-to-head.
Yeah.
MMOs, unfortunately, are very different by nature in that you're immediately thrusted into with right. being with other people. There is no solo play.
But that's false. Is Free Realms an MMO?
Yeah.
It's multiplayer. It's online.
Okay.
But you can solo in it.
But it's not an adult complex level game. And yes, you can solo in EQ2 just as well.
Okay, but my point is there are tutorials and it's not rocket science. Come on.
Okay.
It's not like they would have to. I think it's a great idea.
Fair enough. I think Tanya should jump in, meet Sprouts. They go on some adventures together, and then they email us later about what's going on over there
after
on Facebook.
After they've ridden off into the sunset?
Yes.
Okay. So the other thing she talks about in her email is what's great about the extended server, which, you know, me and you, Del, have been guilty of poo-pooing the extended server.
Yes, I looked down my nose at them. You're right, I have in the past.
But she gives a really, really excellent basis and explanation for her particular reason for wanting to be on the extended server. And it fills, I think, a niche, an important niche, I think, because it is an MMO of basically allowing people to have a meeting place and play together and bringing people into the game who wouldn't otherwise be able to play. What did you think about that little last paragraph of her email?
I absolutely agree. I thought it was, you know, to me, one of the best parts of the email because it showed at least me, who, like you said, poo-pooed on Freeport, that there is a real-world case study of why it has a good place and it fits. She wants to be a little bit more hardcore of a player, that she has more time and therefore, you know, has purchased the $15 account, but she still plays with family and friends who don't have as much time. So for them, it would be a waste for that $15, and then they would make a decision eventually not to play at all. It's not worth the $15. But here they can buy into different tiers that match the amount of time that they can dedicate and get value out of what they're paying to Sony and still play. So I was really, really pleased to hear that, and made me feel bad that I have been at times poo-pooing it, because this is a great case study as to why Freeport works.
Yeah, I agree, and it opened my eyes a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to say it opened up my eyes, and I saw the sign.
Oh, my. I feel a song interjection coming on. Well, Del, that about wraps up all of our emails.
Yes, it does. And thank you to everybody who took the time to email us. And we look forward to getting more emails in the future. So if folks have things they want to share with us, please, you can drop us emails. We'd love to hear from folks.
So really quick, I have a favorite thing this week and a least favorite thing this week. And I thought maybe I could ask you to come up with one too.
Okay.
All right. Shall I share my favorite thing?
Yes. What is your favorite thing?
My favorite thing this week is Monk Pebbles are now in the currency window.
I did not know that.
Ha ha ha.
Fantastic. And I have feeded back that many times.
Yes. Very happy. Yay. Do you have a favorite thing this week?
I do have a favorite thing this week. And my favorite thing is less lag in the Storm Gorge public quest.
Yay.
Certainly not all gone, but far less than there has been in the past.
Yay for less lag. You know what? Maybe we should do this in reverse order next time, because we're ending on a negative note. But my least favorite thing this week, our guild event log is still broken since the server merge with Najina in December. Broken.
What is specifically broken about it?
When you log in, the events are out of order, like all wonky. When you delete events to clear space, the next time you log back in, they're back. Annoying.
Oh, okay. I have to be honest, I was not aware of that defect.
Well, if you look at your guild event log, if they save any, like if there are any locked events from, say, guild leveling or whatever from the past, anything. It's all wonky. It's all out of order. It's not completely jumbled, but it's like big chunks are in the wrong place. So like new events will be scrambled in with year old events and things like that. And then you try to delete some of the new stuff of people looting fabled keys from zones. The next day you log back in and those are back. So find that incredibly annoying. And some people have posted about it on the forums and it's still broken. What's your least favorite thing this week?
My least favorite thing this week is faction threshold limited quests. Quests that you can't get once you have too high of a faction. I don't believe that success should penalize me as a player and lock me from content.
So in other words, if you have made too good of friends with the Othmir, you now cannot do a particular quest that people who are non-friendly with the Othmir can do.
Correct.
I see. Okay, well, thanks for that. And if anybody listening has their own personal favorite thing this week or least favorite thing this week and you want to share it with us, feel free to email us.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you.
So we have a little bit of back to the usual, are you smarter than a Delmon? Because we all know everybody's smarter than an Allie, right?
You did pretty well.
So we have two categories. Del, can you give the new listeners a quick rundown?
Sure. We're going to play a little bit of a trivia game called Are You Smarter Than Delmon? Allie has two categories, and she's going to share those with us in a moment. I will then pick the category that I think I am most confident in answering, and then she'll give us the trivia question, and I'll do my best to try to answer it. Hopefully this all works out well. You're invited to play along at home as well.
You remember we have a normal and a challenge mode for each question.
Oh, I thought with new DOV I got to click the door at the beginning. I didn't know I had to.
I can give you the category, which is essentially knowing the zone that you're going to.
Okay.
And you can decide which version you want to go into.
Okay. So what are our categories?
Our categories are, these are actually things that you've passed on in the past.
I passed on them for a reason.
No, well, you passed on them without knowing the contents of the box. Just simply looked at the label on it.
That is true. I judged a zone by its name.
Exactly. So our first category is the eyes have it. Our second category, medicine for the soul.
I'm going to go with the first one, the eyes have it. And because I'm coming off a little bit of a layover, I'm not feeling super confident this week. So, and I fear retribution from Are You Smarter Than Allie? So I'm going to go easy mode this week.
Normal mode. Well, retribution would imply that these were not, I mean, that would have to be a new question. These are previously created questions prior to the horror that was episode 20.
Oh, so the payback is still coming then. Alrighty.
Yes, it's yet to come to fruition.
Alrighty.
So you have chosen normal mode.
Yes.
Your question for the Eyes Habit category is, how many playable races are available with glasses? And what are they?
Okay. I believe gnomes would be one. I believe Ratongas are two. I don't believe high elves come with glasses. Dwarves do not. Wood elves, no. Sarnak, no. Trolls, no. Ogres, no. Dark elves, no. There's a lot of no's here. Barbarians, Karens. I am going to say that it's two, and it's gnomes and Ratongas.
Is that your final answer?
Yes, because I don't think froglocks have glasses either. Havelings don't either. Yeah, I'm going to go with gnomes and Ratongas because those are the only two that I'm confident that do. I don't know of any of the others, and I don't think they do. But yeah, I'm going to go with that.
Well, you would be correct.
Yes, really, there's only two.
There are only two. Do you know how many playable races there are total?
Yeah, I'm going to tell you 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. I have 13. That doesn't sound like a nice round number, so I'm going to say there are 16 playable races.
There are 20 if you include vampires.
Okay.
Which, in my opinion, is technically not really a race.
Okay. Fair enough. Wow, I have to say, that's very interesting that out of 20, if you want to, it's 19 or 20, that only two of them have vision issues. That's interesting.
Well, you know what they say. Boys don't make passes at girls who wear glasses.
Ah, yes, yes, yes. And
or,
you're right.
Or I have rats, or gnomes, for that matter.
Yeah, I'm going to say yes. That saying holds true in EverQuest 2. I do not hit on gnomes and Rotongas.
Yes, you do. I've seen you hit on a Rotonga.
Was I half through a six-pack of Brel's Finest?
No, I've seen you hit on her on a number of occasions.
Okay. I didn't think we were going to talk about that during the podcast. What happens in game stays in game.
I'm sorry. I shouldn't have outed you. Well, since this subject is now dead in the water, would you like to know what the challenge mode question was? Just for
sure.
Fun?
Sure.
The challenge mode question. What color do evil eye have? What color eyes do evil eye have?
I can tell you what color Evil Allie's eyes are.
Yes.
They're green.
Yes, but Allie is not an evil eye.
I've gotten the evil eye from Allie. Does that count?
No, it does not.
I'm going to say they have blue eyes.
Is that a shot in the dark?
That is kind of a shot in the dark.
Or is that a real guess with actual data?
It's a shot in the dark.
Well, you would have shot it in the dark correctly.
Oh, really?
You would have won challenge mode.
Oh, very nice. Huh. I'm feeling pretty good about myself right now.
Yeah, but you didn't pick challenge mode. You went easy mode.
That's true. I'm still comfortable with that. I'm comfortable with that.
Good. I'm glad you're comfortable. Well, by the way, I did have a little note about this in case anyone questioned the veracity of this answer. Gazers also drop evil eye parts, but technically they're not evil eye. They are gazers. They have green eyes.
That is a lot of research.
I know. For a question that wasn't even used. So guess what? Medicine for the Soul goes back into the to-do pile. Why are you avoiding this topic? You just don't like...
I don't like to have to take my medicine.
You don't like what it implies?
It sounds like a healing question, and we all know I'm not a good healer.
That's interesting.
So on that note, do we have anything else?
I think we've pretty much covered everything, and I can tell you're ready to fall asleep.
Well, we have been going for a while.
Yes, we certainly have. More than the listeners even realize.
Exactly. More than they will ever know. So let's say this then. Let's say thank you to all the folks who took the time to download our podcast. We certainly do hope that you enjoyed it. We also want to say a big shout out. Thank you to our corporate sponsor this week, CoverGirl. Easy, breezy, beautiful, CoverGirl. And don't forget to visit CoverGirl.com for our color match system. A four-phase makeup match that finds the shades that are best for you, Allie. Every woman, every age deserves to look beautiful. CoverGirl.
Even if she has evil eyes.
Even if she has stank eye. Okay.
Oh, boy.
So yeah. Tell your guildmates and friends about us if you have any suggestions, feedback, comment, or you're a CoverGirl. You can send an email to me. So I'm Delmon, that's D-E-L-L-M-O-N, at EQ2Talk.com.
And I'm Allie at EQ2Talk.com.
And if you want to reach us in-game, that's EQ2.unrest.delmon.
And you can reach me at EQ2.unrest.alicious, A-L-I-S-C-I-O-U-S.
And you can also check us out on the Facebook, where I am Delmon Dragonhammer.
And I'm Alicious Foo of the Woo.
And don't forget, you can also like the EQ2 Talk page there as well. And if you're one of those Twitter folks and you like to tweet and be tweeted, you can find me as Delmon EQ2 and follow me and all my exciting adventures on the Twitter.
And I would tell you my Twitter name, but I forgot what it was because fail at the Twitter.
I'll show you some good tweets.
I bet you would.
All right. So thanks, everyone. Hope you enjoyed episode 21. We'll see you all in, hopefully, episode 22. Say goodnight, Allie.
Goodnight, Allie.
Like heads, shoulders, knees, and toes?
Maresy dotes and dozy dotes and little lambsy divey, a kiddly divey too. My dad's going to kill me if he ever listens to this.
I was promised there'd be no phonetics during this episode.
The Gwiffy Quest. The Gwiffy Quest. Okay, well, thanks for playing on that little...